Well, hello, hello, guys, and you're listening to Beauty Bites with Dr. K, Secrets of a Plastic Surgeon. And today on the podcast, I'm super excited to introduce you to my Instagram friend, Stephen Coe. And you might know his Instagram. It's Kind of Stephen. Say hello from all the way from Canada.
Hi, Dr. K. It's so nice to finally meet you.
I know. We met on Instagram, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's fun. Instagram has been so amazing for my practice this year. Has it transformed your life a little bit?
Yeah, it's been really interesting to see, different experts, to see what sort of work that they're doing. And especially, I think, for people like you who are, you know, plastic surgeons, it's really nice to be able to see before and afters and become educated on sort of what procedures and options are out there for people.
And today we're going to talk about one of my favorite subjects ever, which is skincare. And I've formulated my own skincare line, and you are a skincare chemist. So I was so fascinated to read some of your posts because you really look very analytically at the science behind skincare, and hardly anybody does that out there. Is that just one of your passions?
So, I mean, it's also part of my job, I guess, which is to sort of understand the research, how that translates into marketing and to make buying decisions in terms of, what raw materials that we want to purchase and that sort of thing. So, you know, before we spend, you know, quite a bit of money on a raw material, I want to make sure that it's actually going to be able to do what is claimed.
And you are a skincare formulator. So what exactly does that mean, that people will come to you with wanting to make a product and you'll help them formulate the product of their dreams?
So that is something that I do in terms of consulting. As of right now, I'm just working for myself. But cosmetic chemistry is like a pretty broad field. So you have like synthetic chemists that might be developing new materials for cosmetics. You have chemical engineers who help on the production side. You have formulators to develop products. You have salespeople with chemistry backgrounds. It's a whole gamut of career options.
So you studied and did a bachelor's of science. And what else did you study in college?
So I started off in neuroscience. That was something that when I started university, I thought I was interested in. And then I always had a passion for skincare. And it wasn't until my second year that I was sort of like, I realized that it was actually a job. So I switched my degree and started studying chemistry.
Very interesting. I also had a passion for neuroscience. I actually was going to do an MD PhD when I got into med school at USC. I got into the MD PhD program and I was studying neuroscience with the really famous neuroscientist named Richard Thompson at USC, who studied the molecular mechanism of memory and the hippocampus. And then I just got sidetracked into the clinical, but I love research. It's one of my main passions. So
yeah, it's really interesting to sort of see the physical mechanisms that that create the processes of our mind. So I was like really interested in perception, like mainly the vision pathway. It's a lot of memorization, which you're probably great at, but I'm not. So for me, it was a lot of reviewing and like memorizing things that I'd already memorized, and like a lot of statistics, which isn't necessarily like my most favorite thing.
I know. What is your pet peeve about some of the stuff you see on Instagram? People who don't know anything about skincare posting about how theoretically to take care of your skin or what products do.
So my thing is, like, if you're a skincare influencer or someone that like is really interested in skincare, I think it's okay to make mistakes while you're learning. But I definitely think the bar should be a bit higher for, you know, companies, especially in terms of like what they're educating their consumers about. I think the biggest pet peeve I have is sort of, I guess it would be turning every issue into a black and white. So it's like, you must do this and not this, or like, if you do this, it'll do that. And like, don't do this. From a marketing perspective, that's like a very easy way to sell your product and like, you know, lay down the ground rules. But skin, biology, all that stuff, it doesn't always work that way. It's sort of, you know, on a curve, it might work for most of people that way, but not everyone.
That is very true. And I completely agree with you. There are so many influencers out there who are now talking about blogging about skincare and what's the best product that they need, everyone needs to be using. And it's like, how do they have any credibility? They, first of all, don't know basic science and chemistry and biology. And second of all, you don't have to go to school for that, but at least you should spend an hour or two reading about it if you're going to write a post and tell a whole, influence a whole batch of people to start doing something. But I think really they just, there's a lot of posting about people who get free stuff and want to promote, you know, advertising or sales of a product without really looking into, like, is this a quality ingredient? And is this something that is recommended for every skin type? So I would agree with you. Skincare companies, they need to, like, step up their game and work with experts.
For sure. And, like, you know, something that you mentioned, like bias is a huge issue in terms of like reviewing products. And it's also a big issue in science as well. And I think something that like probably doesn't always come through when people talk about science and research and that sort of thing is the uncertainty. So that's why I always try to couch what I say in like maybe or like could possibly. But again, as a consumer, you want a yes or no answer. Mm-hmm. So I definitely understand the desire to find that sort of advice that's like very black and white, and to also give that sort of advice that's really black and white. Mm-hmm. A lot of times when I'm talking to people and they're looking for some sort of remedy, I always feel bad because I'll give them some options and I'll say like, you know, I don't really know whether or not this will work for you, but it's something that you might want to try.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. People want the fountain of youth. They want to know what works and where is it? Why don't I have it? But if you had to pick your three desert island products, what would you pick? Well, sunscreen, so I'm sure.
Yeah, sunscreen would definitely be one because I think that would make that desert island a little bit more comfortable not being sunburned. Something else that I would probably bring is probably a balm like Aquaphor or even, just petroleum like Vaseline because it's pretty versatile in terms of what it can do. And something else would be probably antioxidant serum, so like a vitamin C or something like that.
Yeah, I think I'd agree. That sounds like a good choice. For sure, I think for sure vitamin C, definitely sunscreen, most probably Retin-A just so I can stay youthful. But then, yeah, something emollient would be really good too.
Well, I was thinking if you really need it, you could use the Aquaphor or the Vaseline as like a torch or something.
Right. Or you could eat it, I guess. Imagine it's edible fats, right?
Yeah.
We were talking about dry winter skin the other day. Do you have any favorite tips coming from Toronto in Canada? You must be an expert at dry skincare.
So in terms of skincare products, you can definitely use products that are richer, have more lipids and waxes. But I think there's some easy things you can do as well. Like if you've seen in Asia, a lot of people wear face masks and that's to block out pollution. But that can also reduce the amount of wind that's getting on your skin and sort of create like a little bit of a humid microenvironment so your skin won't dry out as much. Mm. So just covering up the skin is like a huge help. And also, whether it's the office or home, keep an eye on the air humidity. You don't want it getting down to like 20% to 30% relative humidity. So like a humidifier can definitely help, but you also don't need to, humidify the place until it's damp. Just like raising it a little bit should be able to help quite a bit.
That is true for sure. And then tell us a little bit about your projects this year. You're coming out with, you're working on a skincare line, formulating one. That's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, like, as you probably know, it's a very long process and there's a lot of steps in the way that, you kind of don't expect to be a huge issue, but then turn into one. So I've been working on these formulas for, I guess these ones specifically, about 2 to 3 years. So I've been able to stabilize vitamin C as ascorbic acid, which is its most well-researched form. So I've been able to get it stable in the packaging and formulation for about a year to a year and a half, which is something that I'm really proud of and really excited about.
That's awesome.
Thank you. But there's definitely still some more challenges and tweaks in terms of like, how it applies, how it smells, that sort of thing that I'm working on now as well.
Yeah. For those of you who are listening, it's so common for people to say, oh, I want to start a skincare line, but you really, really have no idea how hard it is. First of all, you can pick all the quality ingredients you want, but if they don't blend well and they don't sit in a bottle and if they lose their oxidative, you know, they get oxidized and lose potential, there's no point doing it at all. You need to have a product that has stability, that doesn't degrade, that's stable in a, you know, a bottle, and that dispenses well, that smells good. It's really challenging to come up with that.
Mm-hmm. And that's only like, you know, one side of the problem. You have to have the soft skills of like marketing, be able to reach people, getting your product into the right people's hands, and you know, really just being passionate and being able to talk about your product like all the time, which can be challenging as well.
It's super challenging. I've had my skincare line it's going on like 11 or 12 years now. And I started with just an acne kit and then grew to a moisturizer and now have like about 10 to 15 products that I use. And then each one is specially formulated. Each one is tweaked, but I try to kind of come up with stuff that's good for every skin type, because then you also have to worry about product liability and people getting reactions, and it's just such a complex industry. So I've just personally had a really fun time watching your Instagram and learning how you analyze products that are out there. So keep up the good work.
Thank you, and congratulations on your line. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd love to send you some to try.
That'd be great.
That will be fun. Tell us a little bit about, so two things that I've learned from reading some of your posts on sunscreen. What are some interesting things you can tell us about sunscreen that not everybody knows or that people kind of don't quite understand?
So one of the biggest misconceptions is that you should use an inorganic or physical sunscreen differently from a chemical or organic sunscreen. Really, I think the best advice is to use them liberally. The exact density is 2 milligrams per centimeter squared, but like, I think an easy trick is to just apply your sunscreen twice. And then you want to wait about, you know, 10 to 15 minutes to let it dry before you start doing activity or get dressed or, you know, go outside. And that's just to allow the sunscreen to form an even film on the skin and to sort of bind so that it stays on better throughout the day. Organic or chemical sunscreens don't need to quote unquote activate. They're absorbing UV as they are. Use them the same way. I think for people with deeper skin tones, chemical or organic sunscreens are usually better because they don't give that white cast. I've seen a lot of like tips that don't really make sense.
Yeah, and then the story of you need to use a shot glass worth. Like, nobody is using a shot glass of sunscreen on their body or face, I don't think. But I like the tip of put 2 layers. That's a good one.
Because most people use about half as much as, like a quarter to half as much as they actually need. And I find it's actually, it feels a little bit nicer on the skin when you apply half, when you apply it in 2 layers.
That's true. How about those spray sunscreens? What are your thoughts on the, you know, in the summertime, you see that film of stuff on all the swimming pools that people have sprayed so liberally that it's like floating in the swimming pools. Do you have any thoughts on the spray sunscreens?
So the way that the SPF test is done, from my current understanding with spray sunscreens, is actually you like spray it into a cup and then you measure it from the cup and then apply it to the skin. So it's actually not like sprayed onto the skin and then tested for its SPF. What that means is like, it doesn't really account for the spray pattern. So if you're spraying it and like, you know, only 20% or 40% of it's actually making it onto your skin, you might not actually be getting the protection that you think. So I think it's a really convenient way, I think, to top up your sunscreen throughout the day. But I think for that first application, I would probably stick to a lotion or, you know, spray into the palm of your hand and then spread it on. And that way you can make sure that you're applying it evenly and applying enough. But, you know, throughout the day, if you just want to give yourself a spritz every 2 hours or whatever after activity, I think it's a great option to do that.
Yeah, that is a really good option. And I also like Color Science, the powder mineral duster brushes. Those are really nice. They're SPF 50. And then that goes on well over makeup or just takes away your shine in the middle of the day. So that's a great one too for people who are listening. Tell me what you think about, this has been like the year of hyaluronic acid, I think. Every product out there now has hyaluronic acid in it. What are your thoughts on hyaluronic?
So it's definitely a good ingredient, and like, you know, you use it a lot in your practice for filler, and it definitely does bind along water. And it also has like a really nice spreading effect. Like it feels nice on the skin when you apply it. It's definitely pricier than some other humectants. In some experiments, they've compared it to, you know, plain old glycerin. And sometimes the glycerin actually outperforms the hyaluronic acid, depending on, you know, the molecular weight and like the humidity and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely recognizable and like popular. Does that mean it's the best one? Not necessarily. But glycerin, for example, or like propylene glycol, butylene glycol, other humectants, they can feel a little bit sticky or like thick on the skin, whereas like hyaluronic acid can be a little bit lighter. So it can be just a texture preference as well.
That's true. There's another company that's now has glycosaminoglycans in their skincare. It's called Sente. And I've been using mm-hmm. that lately, and it's actually really super hydrating. So it's interesting now to put back components of normal skin back in your skincare and have them somehow permeate through and hydrate the skin.
Another buzzword, I guess, is NMF, which is like natural moisturizing factors. So those mm-hmm. are like amino acids mm-hmm. And like some other organic acids. And like those are becoming more popular. It's not that they haven't been used in products before, but they've never been so in the front in terms of the marketing. So that's definitely interesting to see.
Yeah. Do you have predictions for 2019 or 2020, what you see coming in the skincare pipeline that's going to be super popular or that our listeners can look for?
I definitely think companies are still going to keep pushing AI in terms of like making beauty decisions. And I think they'll probably still be a little bit underwhelming, but it's definitely like all the press releases I'm seeing are very focused on like AI and using technology to help consumers. But at the end of the day, I think beauty is a very personal and like emotional industry. So I don't know if like algorithms and that sort of thing always work out for the consumer.
I love your weekly beauty recaps. That's been super helpful. And those of you who are listening, if you follow Stephen on Instagram, he does this weekly sort of update of industry tech talk and what's happening and new trends. And it's really helpful. Where do you get all that info?
So I spent about, depending on the week, it's about 15 to 20 hours during the week just reading all the articles and putting, not all the articles, but like finding the articles and putting things together. It was something that I was doing for myself just to keep an eye on, you know, what was becoming popular, what companies were like launching new products or raw materials or that sort of thing. And I decided to start sharing it and it kind of became its own little thing.
That's very cool. And one last question on skincare. Tell us about officially the difference between retinol and Retin-A, because that is something that's misused a lot.
So Retin-A is retinoic acid, whereas retinol is vitamin A retinol. So your body uses enzymes to convert retinol into retinoic acid. Retinoic acid is the active metabolite of retinol. So it's stronger, it's prescription only. And it's definitely the best researched ingredient in terms of reversing photoaging, acne, and like sun damage, which is photoaging, I guess. But yeah, so the difference is sort of the strength, the metabolic activity, and the, I guess, whether or not one's prescription or not.
That's right. And then I tell my patients, if you're looking for a good Retin-A product, of course, prescription is best. But just start on something, even if you're starting with oil of Olay that has retinol in it. That's better than doing nothing for your skin as far as anti-aging. So it'll help you with fine lines, with crinkles, for pore size, for texture and pigmentation. It pretty much helps with everything. Retin-A is going to increase the thickness and padding of your skin so that you don't get thinning, atrophy, and kind of like grandma skin. So it's one of my favorites, right?
For sure. And like, as you said, like with retinol, it does convert into retinoic acid. So you are getting those same benefits. It's just, there's more research on retinoic acid because it's gone through drug trials.
Yes. So it's tested and proven, whereas everything else is not. Really, it's one of the few ingredients that's tested clinically in research trials.
Yeah, and it works really well for people that can tolerate it.
Well, it's been so fun talking to you, Stephen, and I've really enjoyed learning from you on Instagram. And where can our listeners find you?
So on Instagram, I'm on Kind of Stephen. So that's KindofStephen. And I have a website, my blog, which is just kindofstephen.com. And I'm also on Reddit, but it's not always skincare on there.
Well, when you come to LA, you definitely have to come visit me in LA.
Yeah, I love that. I definitely want to get some of those pillow lips.
Yes, I love them. I do beautiful lips, cheeks, jawline, the works.
Yeah, I love watching your videos. They're really, I love seeing the before and afters and just the whole process.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for tuning in, everybody, and say hi to everyone in Canada from us. You're listening to Beauty Bites with Dr. K, Secrets of a Plastic Surgeon. Don't forget to find me doing amazing things on people's faces at Beauty by Dr. K, D-R-K-A-Y, on Instagram and my website, and check out my skincare line, and coming soon is Stephen's skincare. Take care. Thanks again, bye. Stephen. Say bye.
Bye.
Bye, everybody. You're so welcome. Stay beautiful.